Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are broadcasting live from Marquette University Memorial Union. We have many more students with us this hour, which is great, and we have our studio audience. We have a great panel this hour. This is the hour where people can make a case for one candidate or the other or the other or the other if you're supporting third-party candidates in the presidential race, and we have a great panel, and thanks, everybody, for having us here at Marquette just days now before the presidential election. We have five guests with us this hour. Mayor Tom Barrett is joining us, and he was one of the early leaders in the state to announce that he was supporting Senator Barack Obama. He did that in April of 2007. He, of course, is the mayor of the city of Milwaukee. He was elected in 2004, won a second term in 2008, and he has also served as a member of Congress for a number of years, was reelected, I think, about five times, and is heavily involved in the Obama campaign right now. Mayor Barrett, hi.
Good morning.
Yeah, thanks very much for being with us. Margaret Farrow is also joining us, the former lieutenant governor of the state of Wisconsin. She was the first female lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, and she has also been elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly, later the Wisconsin State Senate, from a district that comprises most of Waukesha County in Wisconsin. And she also, I believe, is a graduate of Marquette University. So that's nice. Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrow, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Yeah, and she will be representing the McCain campaign this hour, a supporter of Senator John McCain. Caitlin Andrews is with us. Caitlin is a senior at Marquette University from Houston, Texas. She is double majoring in political science and public relations and is co-chair of Students for Barack Obama on the campus. She said she was getting involved in the campaign because she was motivated by his progressive vision and calls for change. Caitlin, thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely.
Also joining us on our panel is Nicholas Glazer. He is with Young Americans for Liberty, and he has been involved in politics since high school, believing that a call to public service is the highest calling one can have in a democratic society like the United States. He's a senior majoring in political science and criminology and looks forward to getting involved in law, politics, and business after he graduates. Thank you very much, Nicholas, for being with us.
Good morning.
And finally on our panel is Matthew Dambach. He is a political science and history major from Naperville, Illinois. He is with Students for McCain and has been a supporter of Senator McCain since he announced his candidacy last spring, and he decided that he would dedicate himself to helping him win the presidency. And we thank you so much, Matthew, for being with us. All right, this is a time when people get to make the case for one candidate or the other, including our studio audience, our Marquette University Union audience, and our by phone audience. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. And let's start with the students, because I'd like to concentrate just a little bit. We talked last hour about the enormity of this election. You are always discussed, the youth vote, whether or not you're going to turn out. Are you going to turn out in huge numbers? Why didn't you go the last time? Were you, you know, sleeping in, or what was going on? Are you committed or aren't you committed? Let's start with you, Caitlin. Is this a different election for young people? You go to school here at Marquette. Are people more motivated? Will there be more young people who already have voted or will vote?
Absolutely. I think it is a huge election for everyone, but especially for the youth. I think that the issues being raised right now, especially in the economic situation that we're in with the war, the environment, there's so many issues I really think speak to youth. I think that we've seen an unprecedented turnout in the primaries, and then already the huge number of youth registered, actively engaged, volunteering, participating. I definitely think this will be a huge election for everyone, but especially for young people.
Mm-hmm. Matt, do you agree?
I completely agree. I just want to point out that a lot of attention has been given to the Obama campaign and the support that the youth generally give him. But at the same time, at least here on campus, I've seen a tremendous amount of support for Senator McCain. So it's not just the youth getting involved with the Obama campaign. I think there's even though John McCain, as a 72-year-old man, a lot of young people may have a hard time relating to him. But I feel a lot of people see that his policies and his vision for the future are probably what's best for our country.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas. Mm-hmm.
I think it will be important that the youth come out and vote in this election. I think they will. And to reiterate what Matt was saying, I walk around campus and I see not just Obama signs, but McCain signs in people's windows. And so I think, although a lot of attention has been given to Obama, I think that McCain has a lot of support on this campus from students as well. Mm-hmm. So it will be important, and they're going to come out and vote.
Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrell, we talked a little bit about the enormity of this election, the incredibly difficult times this country is facing economically, wars going on. Who knows what the next president is going to have to face, but it's going to be enormous. Do you see a very different vision, and have seen this as this campaign has gone on and on and on, between Senator McCain and Senator Obama as to the vision they have and how the country may change under their direction?
Well, I think, first of all, it's been a most fascinating campaign. I mean, I used to be where these other young students are sitting as a poli-sci major here at Marquette. When I think of the transition we've had in politics and government and the understanding of government over the decades between, it's been quite amazing. And for that reason, looking at this campaign and seeing how it has really been moved, perhaps by the 24/7 news cycle or whatever, day by day, priorities change. Where is Iraq? We don't talk about it anymore.
Right.
Where is campaign finance reform? We don't talk about it, this rotation at all. And it still is a work in progress, even though we've had a major piece of legislation passed on it. So when you begin to look at what is ahead, I think the sky's the limit in a way as to what in the world is going to dictate what is ahead. Mm. Because as much as the next president will step into the Oval Office with an agenda promised to deal with immediately, the next day something may happen that completely trumps that. Either our own security is put at risk, or we have another cycle of economic issues that suddenly come about. So I think it's more who is going to be in a position to react, as well as having an overriding vision. And I think what we have heard and what we're seeing is almost true to the historic policies of the two political parties, and that is that we hear Senator Obama clearly saying, government will help you, government is the answer, and we will have all of these great new programs to help you. So just turn to us because we've got the answer, whereas on the other side, we have Senator McCain being much more traditional, saying, we're going to put it in your hands and get out of your way. We're going to let you make health care decisions and get out of your way by setting the stage properly for the individual to finally become involved as a consumer. So we have, I think, a very traditional role promised by the two candidates. But again, are they going to be in control of it? I don't know completely if they're going to be able to follow their agenda
right.
That well.
Mayor Barrett.
Well, first on the election itself, I have never seen a more exciting election in my entire life in terms of energizing young people in particular. So my hat's off to all the young people who are getting involved in this election. It's tremendous to see it, and it's really heartening to see so many young people getting involved. As far as Margaret's characterization, I think it is fair to say that Senator McCain's approach is stay the course. And I can't think of a time in our nation's history where it's more important not to stay the course. Here we are, just before I came over here, I saw that the economy for the third quarter actually shrunk in this country, the first time that's happened since right after the 9/11 attacks. And to stick with the economic policies that we have been following for the last 8 years, I really don't know anybody who says let's keep those economic policies in place, because obviously they haven't worked. And I think what Senator McCain is saying is, look, I've got a steady hand. We can just keep this ship in the same direction. And I think vast majorities of Americans are going to say, no, as much as we respect you, as much as we value your service as a veteran to this country, this is not the time to stay the course. It's the time to change the course. And clearly that's the message that Senator Obama is delivering.
Mm-hmm. Kate, let's talk about how you became involved politically. I mean, I think it's fabulous that young people are, and I sure was when I was young, which was a long time ago now. But I do remember that part of the reason that I got involved was, and I've talked about her before, was because of my grandmother, who was very involved politically, and that enthusiasm. I used to go to their house in Libertyville, Illinois, and watch Meet the Press. Every Sunday, I'd go watch Meet the Press and talk politics from a very, very young age. Two questions here is, What can families do to support a real active involvement in the democratic process? And two, do you think that young people, as I was influenced by my family, ultimately vote as their parents voted or their grandparents voted?
I definitely think that family has a role. I, like you, have many memories of sitting around the kitchen table with my parents. My parents were always interested in discussing their opinions, in hearing my opinion. Even from a very young age, they asked me what I thought and engaged with me that way. As far as how I got politically involved, it was definitely a part of their influence. But also, I remember very well hearing Barack Obama speak for the very first time. I was actually interning in the governor's office my sophomore year of college and went to hear Obama come to speak on behalf of the governor's reelection campaign. And he spoke outside. It was freezing cold, but people were just unbelievably energized by his presence. And he spoke. The crowd was excited, enthusiastic, broke out several times in chants of Obama 08. So, yes, I think from that moment, I was absolutely very involved in this campaign. Do I think that students vote with their parents? To some extent, I do think that parents have an influence. I was reading very recently, actually, though, that as far as this election, we do see a lot of young people who, even if their families have traditionally identified as being Republican, have really gone and said, well, you know, I'm really going to evaluate this myself. I think the Obama campaign has been a grassroots campaign from the beginning, really motivated and energized by the youth. So I think the parents aren't necessarily the primary influence. I think young people are really getting engaged themselves and looking to find that information themselves. And we're seeing a lot of youth discussion and involvement. And so I think it's becoming much more of an individual choice.
Matt, would you agree?
I would agree with most of what you said. I think that kind of growing up in a home with your parents, you're obviously going to be tremendously influenced by them. That happened to myself, and I'm sure it happened to most people on this panel. But I think a lot of people, when they go off to college, when they go off to university, there's a sense of independence, and you're no longer with your parents every day, and you kind of see new ideas and new thoughts, and it can encourage you to lean one way or another. I've talked to people on campus who have Democratic parents who are Democrats, and they're voting for McCain, and the exact opposite as well. So,
And Nicholas?
Yeah, I mean, people's political preferences, among other things, are influenced by their family and, of course, their religion. And a lot of people, especially here at Marquette, grew up in Catholic or Christian families whose the values of that religion and that family have shaped what they believe politically, whether it's they believe in the Republicans or the Democrats and whoever has the better moral stances on certain issues. But people have changed in college. Some have stayed the same, but a lot of people do sort of see college is a time to stray away and find their own way in life and will vote for who they feel like voting for. But at the same time, I think a lot of students will vote for who their parents are voting for and sort of stay the course with their parents. So you see a mixture of it on campus.
Mm-hmm. What are the biggest issues? Margaret Farrell, let's start with you on this, and then we're going to go to the audience and to phone calls. What do you think are the major issues that will affect our young panelists' future in this election? And do they differ substantially from the issues that you faced when you were at Marquette?
I think they do. A lot of, for example, when I was at Marquette, we still had the draft. So in terms of world security, it was part of their life. The fellas that I knew here at Marquette had two choices, go into service out of high school or take some sort of a deferment through ROTC or something and continue your education. And so it was already a foregone conclusion that that was the situation we were in the Cold War years. I think right now it's kind of what's the headline. Quite frankly, it's very much more instant. And again, I would point to the economy. Concerning those young people who are the students who are about to graduate or looking for a career that will help them have the life they want and yet pursue the other interests and avocations they have, whether there's something altruistic or something very just enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So that I think that the economy this time has some draw that maybe it hasn't for the younger generations of voters previously. They all, at that bursting out of college, you just know you're going to win the world. And now they're saying, wait a minute, what's the world going to have to offer me when I get out? So there is more serious view of that.
Yeah.
So I think that that has been an interesting part of it. I think the kind of the unfortunate part of this whole election and the difference between the two candidates is that we know there are cultures that have much more respect for age than other cultures, and this country is known as a youth-oriented culture. And there's a dismissal by some of that attitude for this presidential campaign of Senator McCain's because he is so old. And yet there are cultures in which he would be revered. And when one looks at his 96-year-old mother, you don't argue about his genes, certainly. But I think it's unfortunate that there is that comparison and that I often think because I have a great love of Abraham Lincoln, and I heard you mention it earlier, Kathleen,
yes,
on the show, he couldn't have won. He didn't have the mesmerizing personality or the compelling persona and charisma that we're looking for in our modern-day candidate, apparently. But yet he was the one who pulled us through the most difficult time of our union and the survival of our union. We are at another time in this country where we continue to push the envelope of how long a viable democracy can exist in the way we believe it should exist. And we're at one of those turning points, I think, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the principles we've had as we were founded continue to be our principles going into the future.
Mm-hmm. Tom Barrett, how about you? How have the issues changed for young people?
Well, I think they have changed because I think the issues have gotten more serious for young people. I think part of on one point, I think they do. On the economy, I think they have. On the war, I think it's actually different. I was at the tail end of the Vietnam War, so the lottery was more of a factor when I was going through school. But the war was much more real for college students when we were in school. And so that's why you saw a lot more opposition to the war, I think, among college students in particular, because they were thinking, when I graduate in May, where am I going? That's different now with the volunteer army. But I'd say the stakes have been raised dramatically on the economy because the question is, will this next generation have the same standard of living as the current generation? Mm-hmm. And that's a very serious issue. And with the transformation of our economy to a world economy as more and more jobs leave this country, I find younger people not having the confidence that we may have had when we came out of school. And that's something that I think is very sobering in terms of how they look at an election. But in terms of the future of the democracy, this is the best I've seen the future of democracy. This has actually increased my optimism for the future of democracy in this country because so many people are engaged in this. And I can't think of anything better. The Constitution begins with the words, "We the people." And this is the election in my lifetime where I have seen we the people more engaged than ever before.
Let's welcome phone calls. Let's welcome participation from our audience here at Marquette University, where we're happy to be just days before the, I think, very large historic presidential election. Our phone number for you to join the conversation is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we'll pause for just a moment and return to your participation. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Broadcasting live from Marquette University, and this is the hour that we have students with us who are from various campaigns. We have former Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrell with us, Mayor Tom Barrett, and they're all in this capacity today representing various people that they're endorsing and supporting and working for in this presidential campaign. Let's go to our studio audience, and I believe it's Margie from Franklin. Hi, Margie.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, this is really exciting to be down here. I've gotten involved with this election like never before. I've never been involved. Obama's got me really charged up. Home meetings and talking to people at grassroots level has been very, very powerful. A gentleman in your last hour compared some of this to apples and oranges, saying that we've been given apples and oranges for so long, and we need some bananas and strawberries.
Right.
Well, that right. really struck a chord with me because I'm a dietitian. Okay. So I have a little story here. If the apples are the Republicans and the Democrats are the oranges, as a dietitian, I think I would compare our Wall Street fiasco with a bad case of scurvy. All right? And you treat scurvy with a good dose of vitamin C. And that goes back to the Democrats. Now, normally we want a mixed diet, but when there's a deficiency, we hit it hard. All right? After things are stable, then a mixed fruit salad would probably be best for everybody. Now, I'm a little cautious when I say this, but I really think that race is a silent elephant in the room. I've been doing canvassing. I've talked to people that tell me that they're voting Republican. And when they talk to me for 15 and 20 minutes, their reasoning doesn't ring true. And I just want to remind people, I heard on public radio very recently that 100 years ago, we had 140,000 different kind of apples in Wisconsin, or in America. And now we're down to a couple hundred. Because we thought these varieties were the best. We concentrated on them, and now we are very limited. I think Senator Obama is going to bring a lot of different quality to the table. He's going to have a mixed cabinet. He appeals internationally. I've seen emails from people in Canada and Italy and all over. He's an international figure already. He needs to help us make a better fruit salad.
Thanks, Margie, very much. Very entertaining and interesting. Well, let's go to somebody who had a different opinion first. Margaret Farrell.
I guess I like mixed fruit. I guess my challenge would be, you brought up the Wall Street issue, and that, of course, means the whole financial collapse that we have just seen that is breathtaking, and no one. The thing that I find interesting, and I think Mayor Barrett would agree with me, normally you could say going into a campaign that there would be no huge economic problem because somehow it would be forestalled until the beginning of the year after the election. Be assured of that. Well, we couldn't be assured of anything of this type because of the size of it and the weight of it and the vast impact of it. But if you look at the record and you say, oh, this was all caused by Bush, and I think it's interesting what history will do with George Bush's tenure in office compared to the way everybody's being bushed right now. I mean, we already had Mayor Barrett say, oh, we're going to stay the course. I didn't say we're going to stay the course. That was trying to bush a candidate, as they're doing with everyone on our side of the aisle. More importantly, I said there will be a vision that will be more individually directed in getting out of the way of small business and what have you to be able to control their fate rather than having government be an obstacle to it. But getting back to your apples and oranges and the vitamin C being the solution, vitamin C was in lack apparently for some time because there were many opportunities in the 80s, more importantly in the 90s and in this decade, where many were bringing the issue of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to the forefront, and it was being ignored or it was being not brought forward in the legislature because of the control of Harry Reid and others. So and others previous to that. So I think there's an awful lot of blame to be shared going around, but it is true who's going to bring the best solution out of it. I don't want somebody learning on the job. I want somebody who is already prepared and is skillful on the job. I don't necessarily want to be loved around the world. I want to be respected around the world as the responsible, strong leader that this country has been for a number of decades. And I don't want to just be everybody's buddy and good friend and be willing to sit down at every table with no predetermined agenda that will put us at risk in the way in which we would be able to continue to be the secure strength to preserve freedom for countries that aren't able to preserve their own.
Thank you, Margaret. Let's go to we'll go to you, Tom, in a moment, too. But let's hear from the young people about this issue of race. We hear from so many commentators that
you went to school in desegregated school situations, if indeed that's true. I think there's still a lot of segregation in school districts around the country. But that this issue of race isn't a big thing with your generation, if you don't mind my using that phrase, whereas it might be a bigger thing with people who are older because they haven't had that kind of experience. What role does race play in this issue? What role does it play in your lives and in perhaps even maybe a factor in your enthusiasm for one candidate or another, or maybe that's not the case? Nicholas, you want to start?
Sure. I believe it's important to look at policy and not who the person's race is. And I think our generation is really good at that. But I have known a few people that look at race in two different ways. One, I have seen race be a negative factor in the campaign and I've seen people that said they will vote for John McCain because of Barack Obama's race. But I also know people who are voting for Obama because of his race.
Mm-hmm.
It does go both ways, and I don't think that either of them is right. Look at the policies of the person. Look at how they're going to lead us into the future. Don't look at these trivial things that in the end aren't going to matter.
Matt?
I completely agree with what Nick said. Excuse me. I think it's important that we look at the candidates and their policies to find out where they really stand. And, we didn't grow up in the civil rights generation, so I guess we have a different perspective on kind of society in general, because we weren't around in the 1950s and 60s when there were the race riots and such. So we have a different perspective, but I think it all comes back to the theme that we shouldn't vote for someone simply based on race. Mm-hmm. We need to look at their policies and vote for the best candidate based on their policies and not on the color of their skin.
Caitlin?
I do agree with what's been said. I think we are very fortunate to be a part of a generation that does have less barriers in that area. Unfortunately, I would have to say, of course, race does play a factor. We hear about it. It's discussed, albeit as we heard, people are cautious to bring it up. But I would like to share something I heard on CNN the other day. I heard an African-American woman say that she watched the first debate with her eyes closed, fearing that she was only voting for Barack Obama because she identified with his race. And she said that, she listened to his policies, she listened to what he had to say and decided that, yes, she would have voted for him anyway. And so I agree with what's already been said, that you do listen to the policies, you do listen to what is being said. And I think that people across the country are identifying with Barack Obama, and they do regardless of any issue of race.
Mm. And Tom Barrett, we spent some time talking about this last hour, but it's worth repeating, I think. It is a big thing for this country. It is a big thing when you look at voter turnout in the city of Milwaukee to have an African-American candidate. It's just historic. There's no denying that. Obviously, some people will vote because of the quality of a candidate as well, and he's run a marvelous campaign. But there is something empowering about that, I think.
Well, in some regards, this is a historic election regardless of who wins. We're either going to have the first African-American president or we're going to have the first female vice president in this nation's history. So when people talk about it being a historic election, no matter how you slice it, it's going to be a historic mm-hmm. election. So I think that's important. I will say that certainly the level of enthusiasm in the African-American community is very, very high. And I can tell you, when this campaign started, I had African-Americans saying to me, what are you doing? He can't win. And I said, watch this guy. Because I had followed his career and seen how he had done in Illinois in particular, and his ability to really appeal across racial lines, across all sorts of ideological lines. And I think that's one of the strengths that Senator Obama brings to this, is his ability to bring people together. And I'm one who is more concerned about how Americans view ourselves, but I also think it's important on the world stage to see what people are saying. And I think around the world, people are amazed that here in America, where they associate this country with racial strife, that we are on the eve of perhaps electing the first African-American president. I think that in and of itself is a transformational event in American history and how we're viewed in the world.
Let's go to a phone call. Jean is our first caller here from Eau Claire. Hi, Jean.
have a question more for the younger panelists, but I guess for everyone. My husband and I have been around the block for a few elections, and I guess what we're looking at during this election and maybe even the last couple is our concern about voter fraud, about not so much fraud, but more in the election being stolen. And I was just wondering what the concern was for the younger people about that.
All right. Thanks for calling. Caitlin, you want to start? You worried about fraud?
I think it's always a concern. We hear different reports, you know, who might be doing what shady dealings could be happening. But no, in my experience, every effort to deter anything from going wrong is being made. In my experience, I actually was registering voters. All of the forms were being brought back to the office. Everything was being processed. Everything was being looked at very carefully. I know that especially when it comes to the youth vote, people are being very conscientious about informing young people about how to vote, where to vote, what they need. I think every effort at deterring any kind of fraud or I think the fear was the election being stolen. I think every effort to deter that is being made.
Yeah. Matt?
I agree somewhat. I feel it's important that everyone who wants to vote have the opportunity to vote. But at the same time, sure, there has to be rules and regulations so that there is no fraud. And I feel that some of the laws in Wisconsin are kind of weak on their regulation and how you can, you know, register on election day, and there's really, it makes it difficult to cross-check and make sure that people aren't voting twice and such. And I think a more formal regulation needs to be presented just to ensure the integrity of the election system.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that, Margaret Farrell?
I agree with the points that were made, but I think the concern is that as a state, we do have just about the most lenient voting laws in the country. Each state determines its own laws, and every now and then the federal government has to give us some nudge to make sure all 50 states are doing things properly with an overriding such as the Voting Rights Act. But I think that the concern here is the leniency of being able to register does compel us to have some sort of a fail-safe method of making sure there's no duplication. And at the same time, as a state in the last 5 years, we've been the slowest to implement the requirement by the federal government that we do computerize our voter list. It still isn't in proper shape. And this is the second presidential election that we should have had it in place. And the other concern I have is that I don't think any concern to make that vote valid should be misconstrued to be trying to prevent someone from voting who is legitimately eligible. No one wants to see an eligible voter not be able to vote. The concern I have always had and have said to anyone I've been able to speak to, including our five sons, is when you're going to vote, you've got a responsibility besides the right, and you better be prepared, and you better be willing to sacrifice perhaps a few minutes out of your day to do it rather than having someone want to put it in your lap for you. It's a real responsibility and the one time you can reach into the
sure
democracy.
Is. Plus, it's so much fun. I love to vote.
It's an adventure.
I love to vote. Which is why I probably won't do early voting, because I just love the whole experience. You go to the poll, you see your neighbors, it's a big thing, you'll know the results later in the day, and if I voted now, I'd be too antsy about things.
Well, Kathleen, just make sure you only do it once. I know you love it, but just, I don't want to read about you.
Hey, I'm from Chicago. We had another system down here. Let's go to our audience again. Joan from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. I would like the panel to speak to the relationship of the war and the cost of the war to what that money could do if it were used in this country for our health care and for our school system. It's never exposed by the press. They only put one point, and particularly here in Milwaukee, as a still practicing teacher in Milwaukee after 50 years, I would like to say that the public school is being destroyed by the uneven funding. We have to change the funding so that corporations don't get away free paying no tax, and the homeowner is being pitted against these schools. And the critical thinking skills that kids desperately need to make future reasons is being cut. The music is cut, the debate is cut. Fayette has cut all of these things because the vouchers are keeping allowing kids to stay for the third Friday. The school keeps the money for the year, and the kids are kicked out back into Milwaukee Public Schools, which is so unfair. We have to change the funding program of this, and no one seems to speak about it, and our freedom of the press is going down the tube when all of our stations are controlled by more and more Corporation One power, and our newspapers are being cut, and our textbooks are owned by two or three corporations, and we keep getting this word, we've got to lower the taxes. You shouldn't, don't cut the taxes. I'd love to pay more taxes, but I'd like them to be used as in Norway for public schools, for health care for everyone, and it could work.
All right, thanks, Joan. Who wants to respond to that? Let's have two responses so we can go to more of our audience.
I'm happy to respond.
Okay.
Joan, we can arrange for you to have to pay more taxes, just so you know. I know people, we can do that. And I want to talk about Senator Obama here in terms of what he said, because I again, this goes to why I think he is a transformational figure. And it may sound strange, I'm talking about a commercial, but when you look at his commercial on education, he talks about the traditional issues that are raised in education, teacher pay, class size. But then he does something that I've never seen done in a commercial before. He sits down and looks directly at the camera, and he talks about personal responsibility and how parents have personal responsibility in making sure their kids learn as well. So I think for those who have stereotypes about Democrats and say, oh, all they want to do is throw more money at the issue, he defies that stereotype. He acknowledges as a powerful figure in this country that parents have to play a role in educating their children. And I think having a president who understands you have to have the resources in the community, but at the same time knows the value because he's seen it firsthand in his own life. I mean, the whole feeling about his mother waking him up at 5:30 to study and saying, and he's saying, well, I don't like doing this. And she said, well, this is no picnic for me either. He's lived that. It's real. He knows the value of education and what it's done. It's taken him out of poverty. And I think that's a powerful, powerful message. In terms of the spending, as a mayor of a major American city, would I rather have the $10 billion that's being spent each month in Iraq spent rebuilding the American cities? Absolutely yes. Absolutely yes. Whether it's for healthcare, whether it's education, whether it's for our aging infrastructure, what I call our hidden infrastructure of sewers and streetlights, whether it's for having an improvement in our mass transportation system, absolutely. And I think that we're going to get more of a focus on rebuilding American cities. I have nothing against Iraq, but I want a president who wants to rebuild American cities too.
Let's go to Matt for a response to this too, and then we'll go back to the audience.
Well, on the issue of education, John McCain is a strong supporter of the voucher program, and he will do his best through the voucher program to ensure that every student has choice in their and where to attend school and where to receive their education. I just want to hit on a point the mayor said, and I couldn't agree more, and I think John McCain would agree with this as well, about the responsibility of the parents. The personal responsibility is a key theme because there's only so much that schools can do. Now, it's important that schools be the best that they can and that students receive the best possible education, but at the same time, there's an amount of personal responsibility that goes with the parents, so I think that's a crucial point. And as for the war in Iraq, I don't want to get on the issue of Iraq entirely, but it's the point has to be made that we're making progress in Iraq, and we can see victory. And John McCain has been correct about the war in Iraq and the surge, and Barack Obama has refused to admit that the surge has been successful, and he refuses to use the word victory when discussing Iraq. So that's just a sharp difference between the two candidates on Iraq, and I guess I hit on education earlier. So.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to the audience again. And it's John from Madison.
Yes.
Hi, John.
Hi. I'm representing the Power Vote campaign here on Marquette's campus, and we've mentioned in the last hour that we've gotten 350,000 people, young people, to vote, to pledge to vote on November 4th and hold the next administration accountable for investing in renewable energy and cutting our carbon emissions. These young people have acknowledged that our fossil fuel-based economy has bankrupted our nation, made us less competitive, made us less prestigious on an international level, and contributes enormously to climate change. So we need to do something about this enormous issue. And what does the panel think? I mean, should we do more of the same, which is nothing on the federal level to address this issue, to veto the Kyoto Protocol? Or should we do what science says is necessary and pivot away from fossil fuels and change our energy priorities to invest in renewable energy and energy efficiency, create 5 million new green jobs to fight climate change, and make our economy more competitive and create homegrown local green jobs now when we need them?
Thank you. Let's go to Caitlin and Margaret on this, and to then to pause. Caitlin?
Well, first off, thank you for the question. I'm very familiar with Power Vote and the work that you do on Marquette's campus especially, do wonderful things. I'm reading your T-shirt about green jobs and listening to what you said, and you actually gave my answer in the end of your question, that I definitely think that Barack Obama supports all of the things that you were talking about. The green collar jobs, investing in renewable fuels, I think that is the answer the way that he's clearly stated it several times. I think most recently in the debate he really spelled out, the last debate, really spelled out the importance of turning the United States toward renewable fuels, renewable energy, and a green economy that will definitely alter the impact that we are having on our most fragile environment and the way that we're seen throughout the world. So I definitely think that Barack Obama speaks well to your cause, and you can be assured. I hope that with his presidency, things will turn around for us in that area.
Margaret Farrell.
Well, I certainly encourage the encouragement of the young vote, and I salute you for your effort in that, definitely. I've always believed I don't want any specific group to go to the polls. I want everyone to go to the polls and have it truly be a voice of the people, and I've felt that way since I ran for my first race in local government. So congratulations for that. As far as renewable fuels or green fuels, I have long supported and have long looked at this issue because of my background in legislation, that the truly most least damaging to the environment fuel we have is nuclear. And it is becoming more and more recognized for that. And the dangers that this country has experienced with nuclear fuel, nuclear power plants, has been nil. There has been no death. There has been no radiation leaks that in any way have hampered populations in other countries, such as those in Europe, certainly have a lot more experience with it and proof of the safety of it than we have. So I think the unfortunate thing is that we haven't seen Congress come to grips with the nuclear energy side of it. I think they're beginning to. In fact, I think I've even heard Senator Obama admit as part of a whole package he would look at nuclear energy for a change. Wind power is one of those renewable ones that everybody points to, and yet all the money that we invest in wind power gives us a return on that investment that is at best a third of what the other types are, because quite frankly, unless you're out on the prairies, in our prairie states in the far northwest and coming toward us from that direction, there's not enough wind to be able to say this is a consistent return on investment, and we as ratepayers make the investment. There is not that much, even in this state, where we have found the pockets of enough wind that makes it a worthwhile endeavor. And solar the same way. Where the sun shines, we have solar. Where those of us have cloudy days, we can't count on the solar energy as much. All of them should be part of the whole. And I believe that Senator McCain and his view of this is there is a mix that is needed. There's a reasonable amount that is needed. But I challenge all of the effort, and I don't know if he does, but I'm saying this strongly. There is clean coal, and there is clean coal operating right now in Germany, for example, which is a very green country with a very active green third-party effort. And I think what we have to do is not have blinders on by all of it, and I believe that's where Senator McCain is coming from with his very broad policy toward energy.
We'll return, take more comments from the audience and a couple more phone calls, I hope, at 800-486-8655, broadcasting live from Marquette University at the Student Union. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Kathleen Dunn. We have a few more minutes left this hour. Those of you who are here at Marquette, we invite you to attend our reception where we'll have chocolate cake and fruit, mixed fruit bowl, I think. And that's in the lobby here. And we are going to take a few more questions from our audience. And a reminder to you that we'll be with you again on Monday, the day before the election. Ken Rudin will be joining us, who's the political junkie for National Public Radio. And the second hour of the program, what are we doing, Rhonda, the second hour? Oh, yeah, Robert Dalek, who's this wonderful presidential historian who's written books on many, many of the presidencies. He's a treasure, so he'll be with us the second hour. I hope he'll join us. Let's go back to the audience and to Ron from Milwaukee. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Gosh, so many things that I was going to ask about have already been asked and spoken to. It's just wonderful. And I just want to add to the mixed fruit that we need some raw vegetables. I've been taking care of a child with significant disabilities, and I've changed my own diet because he can hold raw vegetables in his hand, and therefore I don't have to help him as much. Mm. And it seems to me that Americans need to do, I've learned, caregiving in a significant way, and it's changing my health. And I want to talk about the raw truth that Americans need, because it's, to me, the biggest problem in our election process is informed decision-making. And the media is doing a fantastic job. I mean, this program here, coming out of an educational institution and being part of the global brain network of television, internet, etc., is educating the whole world. And it's so much more difficult for despots or pundits or, you know, opinionated, biased people to control our feelings and emotions and our thoughts when we have so much exposure by the media to the raw truth. And for instance, I wanted you guys to speak again to this idea of what are these negative attacks on Obama, these negative campaign things that I think the American people are disgusted with, and yet they have come out in droves by the Republican Party in Wisconsin to my mailbox, and it's just embarrassing to see the lies and the misinformation being put out, attacking personal, when there are things happening in the world that the opportunity for us to learn and grow and change our consciousness and make informed decisions is greater than ever.
So thanks very much. Who most wants to speak to that? Because I want to get Nicholas. You haven't had a chance to speak for a while. Yeah. Go ahead.
First of all, let me just say, you know, thanks for the question. I have your little packet here. I was looking through it. In terms of the negative attacks, it's happening on both sides. There's been mistruths on both sides. And I think you were mainly speaking towards transparency in elections and people getting information that they need to make the right decisions. And I think the major thing you can look at with that is, you know, people have a right to vote, but it's also a responsibility, as was mentioned earlier. With the internet, it's the information age. People have the responsibility to look up the different issues and where their candidates stand on the issues themselves. You know, if they don't take the time to look up what these different candidates believe and they're just voting based on what everybody else is telling them on the talk shows and whatever, then they're not doing their job as a citizen. And so I think that that's really important. I think that transparency is an issue. I think that the media is, in some cases, doing its job. You know, with panels like this, I think this is good. But in some cases, I think it's not been doing its job. But
one more comment we have, if you can hold it to about a minute. That's all the time we have left. Elizabeth?
While she's coming up, I just want to say I'd like someone to speak on behalf of Cheetos and Doritos. We're hearing a lot about fruits and stuff, but there is a large segment of the population out there, including myself, that use those as choices too.
Well, I don't know if we have any of those for you.
And I would jump in. Public radio.
I would jump in and say we do need raw vegetables, and I think the person representing raw vegetables in this race is Sarah Palin, because I think she is the one, first of all, who has shown and is the only one speaking to the compassion of those who need that type of special care that you were just describing, you're giving.
All right, let's
go. No one else has said it.
Let's go to Elizabeth. We're almost out of time.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Waterfall from, I work with Federal TRIO programs at Milwaukee School of Engineering. And I'd like for you to briefly talk about your candidate's position in terms of access to higher education for low-income first-generation students. We all know that middle-class students are not entering college at any greater rate. So the innovations of the future and how we're going to be remain competitive has to do with people who are not currently in the education system, especially higher ed. So could you talk about not their platform, but what their record has been?
All right, and we're going to have to tune in next Monday for the answer. I'm sorry, we're out of time. Elizabeth, the panel is yours. Come up and talk to them. I'm sorry. Thanks, everybody, so much for being with us. It was really a great hour. Thank you. Thanks. And thanks to our live audience here for being with us.
Yeah.
We have a number of people we want to thank from Marquette University, Mike Boucher and Ronna Altenberg and Ann Taklikana. Steve Schultz, Father Robert Wild from Wisconsin Public Radio, Rhonda Fanning, Brad Kohlberg, John Treader, Mimi Notstein, Katie Madsen, Sandy Lewinauer, Lisa Nalbandian, Barb Dubinsky, Cheryl Ward, Sarah Covington, and Aubrey Ralph. Thanks to our guests, Matt Dambach, for being with us. Thank you, and Caitlin Andrews and Nicholas Glazer and Tom Barrett, Mayor of Milwaukee, former Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrow. Thanks for being a wonderful panel. To all of you, only a few days. We'll talk on Monday and after the election as well. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy the hospitality from Marquette, and thanks everybody for listening. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The news, the music, the discussions you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio often trigger a need for more information. It's available from WPR's Audience Services. 1-800-747-7444.
The race between John McCain and Barack Obama has captured the attention of voters across the nation. And on November 4th, Americans will elect a new president. But they'll also elect 435 members of the House, 35 senators, and 11 governors. I'm Debbie Elliott. For all the results, join us for live coverage of Election Night 2008 from NPR News.
Tune in here on the Ideas Network.